You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Season with Peter Schrager is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Season with Peter Schrager. We are now less than 10 days away from the NFL draft, and it is time to just rip through mock draft scenarios. This is why you come to this podcast during this time of year. And I like to think I've got connections with some of the best guys in media who do this for a living. One of them is Field Yates. Field is younger than me. Field has experience with both the Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs, working in their front offices, and has been a rocket ship of a star over at ESPN. He's also a really nice guy, and he loves the draft like I do. We're going to bring Field on in just a second, but here's the exercise I'm going to do with him. We're going to do a mock draft, but the two of us have not spoken. We have not looked at each other's mock drafts, and we're going to alternate one pick to another, one pick to another, and we're just going to let it fly and see where the chips fall. My mock draft, and if you want to listen to it, I put it up on the podcast in the most recent pod. It just went live on NFL.com. Again, a lot of feedback and a lot of it being like, what the hell, which is exactly what we want to do. I think this is going to be a really interesting NFL draft with a lot of teams with passionate fan bases up top. When you're talking about Chicago, you're talking about Washington, you're talking about New England, you're talking about the Giants, you're talking about the Jets, all in the top 10. You're talking about fan bases that are vocal, but also are very passionate about their teams. And I can't wait to see how it all shakes out. But with no further ado, let's get my guy Field Yates on here and let's do some mocking. All right. Our guest is a friend of mine and a guy I've long respected, who I am so happy to see being used in so many great ways over at ESPN. And this year, especially, very prominent in their draft coverage. You're listening to his podcast and you're seeing his stuff with Mel Kiper. I have to think that's the ultimate honor for a guy of the same generation as me who grew up just wanting to be Mel Kiper and do this for a living. Field Yates from ESPN. Field, what's up, man?
Not too much. It's great to be on with you. And I was thinking about this before the recording here of how I really believe, and I'm sure there are a lot of other people in the media that fall into this category, but I know, like, unequivocally that you are one of these people, and I consider myself one of these people as well, that if I were pushing papers in an office, or if I were a doctor, if I were a teacher, I have zero doubt in my mind that right now, while at my other job, I would be thinking about mock drafts. That's the beauty of the draft. It's something that I've loved long before I knew I was going to be in this line of work. And I know you feel the same way, which is why I would consider these next, let's call it 2 weeks, some of the most special weeks of the entire year on the football calendar.
I mean, I remember being in the college fraternity house, draft day, telling everyone on a Saturday morning in April, one of those last weekends of the spring when everyone's out there throwing the frisbee and having a beer. And I was like locked in a dungeon watching the NFL draft day 3 to see where, you know, Leland McElroy was going to go, you know, from Texas. Like, that's the kind of stuff. And I had on Jed Fish, who I'm sure you've come across in your years. I had Jed Fish on the podcast, and he was college fraternity brothers and maybe roommates with Howie Roseman. And
I believe roommates.
He tells a story of how on draft day, Howie put on a suit in college, put on a suit, a tie, and had folders spread across like a desk in their fraternity house room and was like the same way. I think it's a bug. I don't think there's any shame in it. And Peter King wrote his farewell column and he said the one thing he won't miss is doing that April mock draft. It's agonizing. It's painful. You find yourself on the phone with the same people 10 times and then you put it out there into the earth. It makes a little ripple. And then for the hours and hours you labor over that mock draft, the return on investment is just not there. No one is going back and being like, well, this guy got one more pick than that guy. And yet we put all of our hard work and effort into it. And Field, I'm looking online. You haven't done one since April 3rd.
Yeah.
But I have to think,
I mentioned,
you're in the same boat I am, where it's like, I just wasted an entire weekend on the phone with GMs and head coaches, but it's worth it. You put it out, you feel confident.
You have to. And I will say this. Let me rank what I believe are like the priorities of mock drafts. Number one, and this is like way above the rest, entertainment. Okay. They are for entertainment purposes, mostly, not only, but mostly. I find them so fun. The day after this draft is over, I will be reading, or I hope I might have to make my own 2025
yeah.
But I actually think that might be a Matt Miller or Jordan Reed assignment at ESPN. Okay. I will be devouring it. I know you and I share an affinity for a lot of sports besides football. I will read every NBA mock draft between now and when the draft actually takes place. I will do my own NBA draft lottery simulation so that I can make up my own order and then read mock drafts based off of what the order that I determined, totally randomly and arbitrarily with a tool. So I think entertainment is certainly the driving force behind these. It's really hard though, when you take a lot of pride and put a lot of effort into this process, like I know you do. I actually have not, by design, read your mock.
We talked about morning. That. I told you not to.
Yep, we're not reading it. But it being accurate is a really difficult thing to do. There is such like the butterfly effect of just one thing that goes just a little bit unconventionally early at the top of the board can totally change everything. So I would say number two, behind entertainment purposes, is like my goal is I'm less focused on direct hits. Those are great. They would be awesome. I'd love to go 32 for 32. But my real hope is that of the final 32 players that are in my first round mock draft, a significant number of them actually go in the first round.
I think that's solid.
Yeah, that's sort of the goal. That would be a nice, you know, Mel has said a couple different times, if you can be in the 20s with your 32 picks, then you should feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, and I also come at it a different way. And there's a bit of arrogance to it, which I was humbled last year. Like, I come at it and say, no one gives a shit what I would do if I were the Titans. So right. I try to come at it and say, here's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Everyone who's listening or consuming my content, at least you'd think that there is a agreement that, you know, if you're taking my content in, you know where my angle is. I talk to everybody and I hope that they're not BSing me completely. And here's what I'm hearing. And this is where I could see things going. Right. So if I do a crazy trade at the top, this isn't, if I was Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, here's what I would do. I think the Vikings might be willing to give X, Y, and Z up to get up to this spot. And I think that team would be receptive of that. That arrogance, went a long way last year before the mock draft. And I was talking, I'm like, look, you can listen to all the other mock drafts. They don't matter. Mine's the one that matters. And then I think I got 2 of 32 direct hits. I might've been 3 of 32. Like, I got Bryce Young to the Panthers then I got the rest wrong. So this year I'm going to come at it a little differently. I'm going to come with a little bit more humility and say, here's how I think it might go. And we'll see from there. What's your approach to it?
Yeah, I'd say my approach is like that I'm hoping that I roll snake guys on every pick. But, I will say this, and this job can be humbling in so many ways. And taking on a full-time draft analyst role this year has been so eye-opening. It, you know, kind of harkens back to my, you know, my time within the NFL working in scouting departments. And it's so different because the role is you're grading 32 teams worth of players, right? Whereas when you're working for the Saints or you're working for the Jaguars or the Seahawks, you're grading those players for how your team goes about its business and how you see players in your system and stuff like that. But I would say that more than anything, and maybe it sounds like a cop-out, and I know there are a lot of people within the league listen to this podcast, so they can let me know if this is a cop-out. But more than anything, I appreciate the people that really put a lot of time and effort into their mock drafts. Because if we accept that the goal is to not go 32 for 32, I love the fact, like, when I eventually read your mock draft after we're done, I'm going to read it and I'm going to say to myself, well, if Peter is hearing this, or if Peter is suggesting that, or if Peter is, you know, forecasting this, then if I mean something, and if it's way different than something I have previously heard or thought, then I need to account for that. Or if it's something that aligns with stuff that I've heard or thought or mocked already, then it makes me feel that much more emboldened in my stance on those players. So efforts, and again, this sounds like, I feel like I'm having a pep talk with, like, you know, a bunch of 8-year-olds, like, you got to do your best here, kids. But yeah, I really do think you can tell the people that put a lot of time and effort into this process, even if the reality is that the day after round one is over, the mocks that we spent, you know, the vast majority of the past 3 or 4 months doing become worth their weight in paper, right? Now the picks are set. Let's worry about what those players mean with their respective teams.
All right, real quick before we get to our exercise that you and I are going to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on NFL Network's coverage of the draft all 3 days. I'm doing Good Morning Football. Then I'm going to also be on the draft coverage at night. I got a big press release from ESPN with a bunch of names, and it's ESPN and it's ABC. But I saw your face prominently on it. Which network will you be on, and who will you be on with?
All right. So Thursday and Friday, obviously rounds one Thursday, and then rounds two and three on Friday. I'll be on the ABC broadcast. It is truly, and I'm not trying to be self-deprecating.
I get it,
here,
dude,
but like,
it's,
you
nuts.
Know, the showstoppers there are, you know, Reese Davis, the ace host with Kirk Herbstreit, you know, the face of college football, Desmond Howard, college football legend, and then Nick Saban, you know, just making his ESPN / ABC debut in this full-time capacity. So then Laura Rutledge, one of my favorite people at ESPN, incredibly talented, doing all the player interviews, and then Pete Thamel, who is the most plugged-in man in all of college football, and I will be kind of holding down a separate set. And then I don't know exactly with what frequency they'll be coming our way, but I told the producers, I keep telling them, you know, I'll be ready. So if you come to me once, I'll be ready for that one time. If you come to me after every pick, I hope to be ready for those 32 picks on night one as well. And then day three, have a lot of fun. Reese hosting again, that's on ESPN 12 to, let's call it 7, usually when it wraps up, with Lewis Riddick, Matt Miller, and myself. And then, of course, Mel Kiper Jr., who I am endlessly thankful for, to call a colleague, because Mel's 46 years speak for themselves. Wow. And his passion and energy for this stuff never ceases to amaze me. I have tried many times over the past 9 months to throw a sleeper, a guy that Mel, there's no way he's heard of him.
He's got it.
Because he got it. He's got the kid's uncle's name. He's got the kid's high school memorized. He knows what this kid's.
Did you have the book? Like, were you too young for that? Did you order the book as a kid?
Well, I have the Mel Kiper
book. Did you really?
But now I'm trying to continue to stockpile them. Like, I want to go back and see if I can get a
full. It's a cool thing to collect. That's a really cool thing to collect. Darren Revelle might have a field day with that. I feel like if we. Here's Mel Kiper, volumes 1 through 46 of his draft Bible. But the story goes, he was living in, I want to say, like Dundalk, Maryland, some small town in Maryland, and was writing up a draft guide and would send it out to all the teams, and it made its way around, and then he got put on TV, and the rest is history. Incredible.
Yeah, and the draft industry would be something for sure, if not for Mel's presence, but it wouldn't be what it is, I can guarantee you that. And it wouldn't have happened as fast as it did. So, I will defend Mel Kiper Jr. until I'm red in the face, because what he has done for this industry and broadening the reach of the NFL draft is legitimately incomparable. I think there should be a 30 for 30 on Mel one day, because he is so deserving of that kind of coverage, which he will absolutely 100% shy away from, because the guy wants absolutely zero in the way of praise. He just wants to do the job.
Yeah.
It's the best.
He's the best. He's the godfather of it all. And I think we all pay our respects always. And it's so cool that you get to do it alongside him. That's got to be a dream come true. All right. Here's the exercise that we're going to do, Field. Because I was like, who could I ask? I was like, there's two people I want to do this with. It's you and it's Daniel Jeremiah. I'm like, those are the two guys that I've been reading their mock drafts. And I'm like, all right, these are the two that I feel are very plugged in, but also would have fun with this exercise. So here's what we're going to do on this.
So DJ must have said no, by the way, then, right?
I didn't ask DJ.
I'm too busy.
So funny. I didn't even ask DJ. Okay. It's like, we're going to probably ask DJ either end of the week to do it or next week. But like, he's gone a little Hollywood for me, like to the point where I asked him to do the pod and recently, and his response was like, I'm just so booked up with like media engagements. I'm like, okay, dude, enjoy local Topeka, Kansas radio talking about the Jayhawks cornerback that you're going to project in the seventh round. Anyway,
what's going to happen is, you know, LeBron has that new podcast with JJ Redick, which is a basketball junkies podcast, but they're going to find time for DJ. That's the kind of level
that DJ that'd actually be great.
Yeah, I love DJ obviously as well. He's the best. Good human and has been so, I mean, the support he has sent to me during this process has been great.
Isn't it cool that like the two guys that are like at the top of the heap right now are just amazing humans? Yeah. And I hate to like do a commercial for both of them, but like Mel Kiper has no reason to be nice to me. He's always been so gracious. And Daniel Jeremiah, if you find one person in the media or fan or whoever who has a negative thing about Daniel Jeremiah to say, I would love to meet that person.
Undefeated. We were first, right? Yeah, those guys are as classy as it gets, and they remind us two things: one, humility should win, and then two, there's a lot of real estate out there. Just because DJ's got a mock draft doesn't mean that you can't have your own. So they've been ultra supportive, and I'm certainly grateful for that.
You're one of the nicest guys. Do you want to do a list of our top five hated people in NFL media, or no? Do you want to?
Should we save that at the end?
Yeah, maybe we do. Maybe that's the teaser. We'll do that. I've got my list.
Who's at the top of the heap there? I mean, it would be nice. Like, it would be nice to be like a heel in sports media, the guy that just people just
everyone hates.
Yeah. But you know, something they say, you know, like you want to be interesting, right?
Exactly. Nicer, right. Like you said,
interesting
entertainment. That's what this is all about. Entertainment. Sure. All right. Here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to do a mock draft, the two of us. Yep. I'm going to go and then you're going to go. We're going to alternate. But here's the little twist in it. At 17, halfway through, we're going to switch. And the guy that was doing odds is going to do evens just to mix it up a little bit so we can't like project ahead of time.
Okay. So I love that.
I think it's cool. Do you want to like, should we flip a coin? What should we do? Or should I, you know what? It's my podcast.
Yeah.
I'm a gracious guy. Why don't you choose if you want to lead off or go second?
Okay. I'll lead off only for this reason. Mel and I did a comparable exercise where we went back and forth and I had the evens. So I feel like, you know, I feel a little naked on the odd picks right now. And there were a few teams that I find particularly fascinating with the odds in the first 17 picks that I think would be fun to have the opportunity to be at the control panel of.
Okay.
So I'll take the odds. Does that work?
That works great. The question is, do we want to do trades where you could say, I think this team's going to trade up, or should we just scrap that?
I think we should do it because I do think you and I agree there's way too obvious of a likely trade up that whether it gets done or not, it's going to be discussed. It probably already has been discussed. So we should throw that
work, because I think we're doing this on the fly a little bit.
Yep.
Say you're at number three and you have the Patriots and you want to do a trade up. You can say, I'm going to use one of my two trade ups right here. And here's where it is. And we don't even need to have the terms. You just put another team in and we'll go from there. So you have two trade ups that you can do or trade backs or whatever it is. I think this makes it really, really fun.
Yeah, I've got my pad here that I pulled out. It's actually my 2-year old loves to scribble on dad's desk. So I have this. I'm now ready, just in case I'm taking notes in case I forget who I had as a trade up, trade down, etc. But so should I lead it off here with the Chicago Bears? Nice and easy.
The NFL draft has begun. The Chicago Bears are on the clock. Field Yates selecting for Chicago first overall.
I'm going to be more like the Indiana Fever last night during the WNBA draft, where you know who you're taking. Let's spare everybody the suspense and the drama. We're taking Caleb Williams. No all using of the 9 minutes and 45 seconds. Caleb Williams, USC quarterback. Feel really good about this one. Obviously, A, being accurate, and B, you know, love the player. There certainly have been some guys that have made this conversation slightly more interesting, most notably Jaden Daniels from LSU. But my top overall player, and since the first board that I put together, Peter, was Caleb Williams, hasn't changed throughout the process. And I think it's a great situation, obviously, for Caleb to walk into in Chicago.
Yeah, I've done a lot on these pods talking about the Caleb Chicago connection. I mentioned yesterday when I was talking that they've had three really extensive meetings, his combine experience, his pro day experience, and his visit to Chicago. And I could just tell you, talking to the Bears guys, he's blown them away. Yeah. And what's blown him away is his love for football, his passion. Also a little, and this is going to sound crazy coming from a guy who made like $10 million in NIL money. There is a humility there.
Yeah.
And what one Bear source told me, which I loved, is he walks quietly. I'm like, what does that mean? It's like, He's got his own pace. He's not a look at me. He's not wearing, you know, something that's going to scream into the crowd. He comes in with the beard, just a little scruffy. Yeah. He comes in with just a desire to talk football, and he wants to be the best to ever play. And I think everyone does want that deep in their soul, but like this humility, which I didn't see that as the word attached to him, it seems to be coming through to Chicago people, which I think that's going to fit greatly in that city. And hopefully he can bring them to new heights.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say on Caleb is that, you know, he marches to the beat of his own drum in the eyes of some, and you can view that one of two ways. One is, all right, like, what's up with that? I don't like people that disrupt the norm. The other side of it is, don't we want authentic athletes? Don't we want guys who are comfortable in their own skin? Because it is not always going to be easy. Rookie quarterbacks, regardless of where you end up, face some sort of adversity. And I think Caleb, being Caleb, is well equipped to handle whatever adversity may come his way. Now, it may be that he's got, you know, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and potentially other wide receiver to throw to, and things are pretty seamless here. But I do think that Caleb's authenticity is something that really has shined through during the process.
Agreed.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah. It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Number two, the Washington Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, what they have done this offseason in acquiring a coaching staff that I really like, but also a front office. Did you ever work for the NFL proper? Did you work in Park Avenue ever?
No, I never did, but I did work with, well, my first, this is a great, well, this is, I don't want to get too far off track here, but my first summer working with the Patriots in the in-house scouting area, there were three desks, two of which were Brian Flores and Adam Peters. So, amazing. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it was like, if I went through the people that were in the building at that point, you'd be blown away. I mean, I think it was like, I think it's pushing like a dozen or so future head coaches or GMs. But yeah, so I have a ton of reference for from Adam Peters. And I'm assuming you're going to go down the Dave Gardy route right now.
I just wanted to, just explain like who he was. And I find it, so they've got like this, from what I'm told, they've got like this open floor plan in Washington right now where like there's not everyone's in their own office. Everyone's kind of collaborating. And like the thought of Dave Gardy in a Commander's shirt sitting in like an open Facebook style office is like jarring to me because Gardy has worked at the league the entire time that I have been employed by NFL Network. And I think at Fox, and is like the most trusted and beloved guy at the league office from the team side, because they go to him with every question about salary cap, about front office rules, about whether or not this makes sense with the waiver wire. And there are so many guys. Now you're just talking about the New England tree. The management council at the league is a group, and it's all these Ivy League guys and really smart, aspiring ladies. And they go there and they learn the league rules inside and out. And then they're eventually spit out of the league office and they go to teams all over the league. And you could chart 32 teams that have, you know, people who worked, started off at the management council in the league office. Gardy is all of their mentors. And on Monday, to get the Schefter notification that Dave Gardy's leaving the league office to go work for a team, I was like, wow, A, that's surprising. B, how cool is that for him? And then C, That was a sneaky hire by the Commanders. I'm sure a lot of teams would have loved to have him. And like, I think that is a major X factor moving forward as the season goes. And I just love what they've done this offseason in assembling a group that includes him and obviously Peters and then DQ and Kingsbury, great coaches. But then also to tap into guys like Bob Myers and to tap into guys like Dave Gardy, who are outside the box hires. I love it. With the second overall pick, I don't care if it's Dave Gardy, Adam Peters, Bob Myers making the pick, Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU, I have going to the Washington Commanders.
I feel good about that one. I mean, feel great about the player, obviously, after this past season. Only player in FBS history with 350 passing yards and 200 rushing yards in a single game. I mean, the guy put up literally game numbers. It's just,
against two. I got to watch that tape.
Against Florida. Okay. There are a lot of Florida grads. We were talking about Howie Roseman earlier in the show. And, he obviously, and Jed Fish. So I'm sorry if they're listening right now, but all the Florida grads out there, I apologize. But that game was, I mean, that was extraterrestrial stuff there from Jaden Daniels. I think the draft kind of started to pick three.
Let's go.
I think it's interesting. All right. So the Patriots right now, this I think is the dilemma if you're New England, is I think, you know, trade down possibilities are in play here, right? Mm-hmm. Because as we know, there are teams that are interested. As we also know, the price is going to be steep for those teams to move up, whether it's the Giants from 6-3, whether it's the Vikings from 11-3, Broncos 12-3, Raiders 13-3. The big price tag, right? We're talking about likely three overall first round, you know, first round picks overall, whether they're, you know,
from those teams, from those teams in the teens, yes. Like that 11, 12, 13, right. You're looking at as the Trey Lance trade is kind of like the
good basement. Data point. Yep.
It's the basement. You might have to offer more than that. Yep.
I would say that's exactly where you start. What I fear if I'm a team moving down that needs a quarterback is that while the Patriots, I think they have, you know, this is a team that's still got a lot of gaps to fill and it might be a long year this year as they move into a post Bill Belichick world. You know, the NFL, you could easily fall to like the 7th or 8th pick in the draft with like a 5-12, 6-11 record and a couple of weird things take place or late in the season, you play a team, it's all sorts of banged up.
You're in the wilderness.
So you might take that draft capital that you just acquired and then have to use it to move back up because you need to solve your quarterback equation. So I'm going to resist trade down temptation and go with Drake May, who I don't know that he is a lock there. If you talk about, there are a couple of players in this draft that don't generate a lot of divisive opinions. There are some players that tend to be a little bit more all over the board. I don't think people have Drake May. It's like a second round pick, but I think there are some people that feel like he's absolutely worth every penny at pick 2 or pick 3. There are others who say, I wish it were a little bit lower that I were taking him. You don't have that luxury though. If you're a team at the top, you take the player, the bird in hand. And I think there's a ton of potential for Drake May, a ton. It may take some time there, but a 21-year-old 6'4", 230 with that arm, that's a rocket. I'm betting on Drake May.
Basketball family, incredible athlete, great kid, superstar in Charlotte. You know, that Patriots place in Foxborough that, like, you know, it's right about that. So they took him to Davio's at Patriots place a couple of weeks ago, wined and dined him. And I'm
a great Italian steakhouse.
There you go. I talked to multiple people in that building and they like Daniels and they're going to love McCarthy. I haven't spoken about JJ, who's meeting with him this week, but they loved Drake May. Yeah. I think they're comfortable with Daniels or May and they'll take the chips that fall as they may. And it's like, we're not planning on being in the top three too often. Let's get a quarterback. Let's not overthink this.
Yeah. Chicago was in a unique spot last year where Justin had still, you know, only two years into his career, had shown enough promise that you can justify the trade down and bet on the possibility of Justin and ascending. Now they end up getting the first overall pick this year, so it was all moot. But it's a really difficult thing because if you're moving down with Minnesota as an example, Peter, 3-11, you're not getting one of those first three or four quarterbacks. And Minnesota with a good quarterback next year and that roster,
I know.
Are you kidding me? Like that pick that they would potentially get in 2025 could be like 21, 22, right?
I know.
That's the risk you run. So we feel good about the first three picks being quarterbacks. I don't know that it's the Patriots at 3, but I would guess the Patriots end up sticking at 3, taking a QB.
Number 4, the Arizona Cardinals are on the clock. I'm going to use one of my two trade-ups.
Okay, one of two has been exhausted. Got it.
Here we go. The New York Giants move up two spots from 6-4. Here's the trade compensation. I've kind of gone through the Jimmy Johnson chart and then talked to people around the league. Because it's just two spots. Yeah. I think it would be the 6th overall pick. All right. a third round pick from this year and then next year's second round pick. Does that seem too light, or do you think it would have to be a little bit more?
No, I think that's a good starting point. Now, Arizona will ask for more. I think Arizona would say, give us 2025's one and we have a deal right away. I think the Giants would say, let's negotiate. Yep. I remind people of this all the time. The draft charts, a nice proxy, right? Yep. But they matter a whole lot more the further you get from pick number one, right? And when you're paying up the price for a quarterback premium, you can expect that it's not going to follow the chart perfectly. So regardless of what six plus the Giants third rounder plus the 2025 second rounder says, according to whichever draft chart you like the most, the Cardinals are going to quote unquote win that trade based off of the draft value chart. But the Giants in this scenario, I would assume, are getting a quarterback.
Yeah. And to your point, Arizona is going to be listening to offers. Minnesota, I truly believe, is looking to move up. I also think Denver would call, although they don't have many picks to give up. And I think Vegas might call. I think all that might happen. But I think when you're Arizona and you could get one of the wide receivers at six.
Thank you. Yes.
It's, and you're not getting them at 11. You're not getting them at 12. And you're not getting at 13. So it's a lot less pain to move back two spots. I think you might even be willing to take less trade compensation.
Completely agree, Peter.
Yep. So I'm going Giants. And then, gosh, a lot of Giants fans are going to throw their remotes at the screen, because I know that there's a lot of people out there who don't want to. Giant, big blue fans in my life who are like, no, it's just Daniel Jones 2.0. Don't do this again. We still pay Daniel Jones. JJ McCarthy, fourth to the Giants.
There you go. I'm not surprised by that one there. I think the most important point you made beyond the Giants taking a quarterback is that the real risk that Arizona runs and moving too far down is missing out on one of these. I'm not going to use the word generational, but one of these, I think, surefire wide receivers, because there are three. The depth is tremendous. But there are three that really are a cut above.
I think there's three and there's a big gap, and then there's going to be like five others taken in the first round. That's how good this wide receiver draft is.
Totally agree. So number five is the Chargers. I am going to, obviously, in this scenario, the trade up has already kind of taken place, the shake up the top five. So I'm going to say, hey, we have Marvin Harrison Jr. sitting here waiting for us. Now, I have heard all the very smart people, including Jim Harbaugh himself, kind of alluding to it, the importance of offensive line play. That should not be dismissed at all. But in a scenario where I don't think another team is going to be tempted to move up to five here, I think Minnesota, as an example, might be willing to run the risk, play the game, stand pat, a game of chicken here, and say, if we love, and I don't know that they love Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, enough to potentially take him in the first round, we might be okay with just sitting at pick 11 and hoping that things work out. So the Chargers end up taking Marvin Harrison Jr., to me, the most pro-ready player in the class, 28 receiving touchdowns over the past 2 years, Peter, most in FBS. What's so impressive about him is the consistency. I'm CJ Stroud, superstar, maybe the best rookie season ever for a quarterback. This past year, though, Kyle McCord, that was a disappointing Ohio State offense. Mm-hmm. The number of plays left on the field was really kind of stunning, except for when they involve Marvin Harrison Jr.
He still went nuts. Yeah.
Nuts. Yeah.
I love that pick. And truly, if anyone knows what he can do, it's the guy who played against him in the big game three different times or coached against him. That would be Jim Harbaugh. I love that pick. I think that's the right pick, especially with Keenan Allen gone and Mike Williams gone. Six. Now it's Arizona. I think they put their card in. I know they have offensive line needs. I know they have a lot of needs on defense, but I don't think they let Rome Odunze fall out of the top six. I'm going to go Rome Odunze, wide receiver out of Washington. Kyler Murray gets his guy, and I'm sure you're hearing all the same stuff I am. Great player. Maybe
great human.
A better human. I hate that term because it's like this guy is all world. It's all cornerstone. Yeah, please tell me your Odunze.
I had the great fortune of being at both the Oregon and the Washington Pro Day. Oregon was early in the cycle. It was day two of free agency, so a little sparser crowd. Washington, big crowd. They've got a ton of guys, obviously, this year, maybe 10 or 12 or whatever it is that end up getting drafted. Close to 10 could potentially be drafted from Washington. The number may not be exactly that. But Rome opted not to take part in the Pro Day after working out the combine, right? He was the one receiver of that top group that did everything. But the involvement that he had, Peter, I mean, it was awesome. Like he was as involved as somebody could be without actually taking part in the pro day. As everybody was watching Michael Penix Jr. run his 40, I was sitting there amongst, about 25 scouts that are all, working the stopwatches, and Rome sitting there as well. And after the 40, I don't know why he turned him, you know, a group that included me, but he's like, what'd you guys get? What'd you guys have? You know? And I'm like, well, I'm not a scout, Rome, but thank you. But it was awesome. His encouragement for others and everybody at that program echoed that sentiment that this is an A-plus human. I'm not going to sit here and try to debate you on Rome versus Malik Nabers, Peter. I think it's wasted energy. I think the reality is that you're talking about guys who, if we use an arbitrary 1 to 100 scale, these would all be, you know, 98, 99s, 97s. So we can bicker. Ultimately, the only people that it matters to about whether they go wide receiver 1, 2, or 3 are the first two teams to take a wide receiver. So if Rome Odunze ends up being better than Malik Nabers, then if Nabers goes ahead of Rome Odunze, the team that takes Nabers will have to live with that. But ultimately, I think all three of these guys are just outstanding.
Let me do a quick reset here. So we have one Chicago Caleb Williams, two Washington Jaden Daniels, three New England Drake May, four New York Giants J.J. McCarthy, five Los Angeles Chargers Marvin Harrison Jr., six Arizona Cardinals take Rome Odunze, wide receiver out of Washington, which goes to seven Tennessee Titans. Field Yates, you are the Tennessee front office and coaching staff. Your selection is whom?
Okay, well, here's the truth, Peter. I want to trade down right now is what I want to do. And here's the reason why. I don't know who I'm going to do it with, and I'm not sure that I can execute this right now. So I am going to...
pick a team, any team.
I don't have a team, and that's kind of killing me right now. I think, so I'm going to do two things. I'm going to state that I believe Tennessee is a compelling trade down team.
Okay.
You know, we're going to have some fun here. Let me disrupt things a little bit, okay?
Let's do it. Let's go. Shake it. This is what the whole thing is. Exercise. Yep. Simulation.
This is going to be tough to do because they have paid premiums recently. I'm having the New Orleans Saints trade up here.
I love this. Go on.
The Titans are at 7. They have a glaring needed offensive tackle. We all acknowledge that. What I am not convinced of, Peter, is that while I have Joe Alt as the number one tackle on my board, and I think many in the draft industry complex have it the same way, I am not convinced that the league has complete consensus that Joe Alt is head and shoulders above Talifuaga or Olufashinu, Troy Fautana, whoever it might be, right? It's closely clustered enough. And with quarterbacks, it's kind of like house hunting, right? Like if you don't get your preferred target, you might move on, right?
Yeah.
With offensive linemen, especially when you have one of the absolute greatest to ever do it in Bill Callahan, he might say, hey, you guys, I'm happy with Joe Alt at 7.
Yeah.
But if we're at 14 and we get Olufashinu, I'm cool with it too, right?
I could coach him up. I love
it. So I'm going to do my trade down. So the Saints now at 7 and the Titans at 14. I do think the Saints have a desperate need at offensive tackle. They may say, hey, let's address that. Round two.
All right.
And that, which may have to be part of this.
Let's just say this is a swap of 7 and 14, and we'll go future first rounder or something like that.
That sounds right to me. Malik Nabers off the board. He stays home, New Orleans.
Nabers and Olave.
I love it. Yeah. And then they do need a wide receiver here. You know, they're offseason investments, you know, relatively modest. Cedric Wilson on a 2-year deal, guy who's released. I guess his contract expired in Miami. So I think New Orleans is a sneaky wide receiver team. And this right here would be as good as it gets on the wide receiver front.
I love
having
that.
Some fun here.
And jumping Atlanta at 8, who might have been in the neighbor's boat. It's funny. The regime everyone thinks is like an old regime because Raheem Moore's coach. But it's not true because Terry Fontenot in Atlanta, the GM, is the one who drafted Pitts and London and Bijan, and it's three different offensive players at skill positions in the top 10 in three consecutive years. I don't see an offensive skill position player now as we have gone quarterback, 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 wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. I think Atlanta takes the first defensive player off the board. I'm going Dallas Turner, pass rusher out of Alabama.
Yeah, one thing we know, I'll just make this, and I don't have a lot to try to disrupt this, but Terry Fontenot, the Falcons GM, targets young players. It's been a big part of his calculus. And Dallas Turner, he's a true junior, right? So he's only got 3 years in college, as you know.
Three-year contributor, though, played.
Yep, I played them all. Yep, and was the SEC defensive player of the year this past year. Great length, great athleticism, 10-plus sacks, versatility as well. The Falcons Terry Fontenot has preferred, he's leaned young. Maybe it's too small a sample size to say that this is a forever trend, but back-to-back-to-back years of going very young make it the fourth straight year. So that brings us to the Jets at number 10.
It doesn't. It brings us to the Bears at number 9.
It brings us to the Bears at number 9. I can barely talk here. All right. So Peter, this one's really interesting. And this might be one of those where like the Bears screaming needs right now are no longer screaming, right? I mean, they've done a lot of work this offseason. I think if one of the three receivers is here, it's really, really, really tempting to just take whoever is available out of Malik Nabers or potentially Rome Odunze. I think that edge rusher is certainly a consideration as well, even after the Montez Sweat trade, but no Dallas Turner here. Leiatu Latu we'll get to at some point, but I do think that given the medical history, there are some that might feel as though inside that top 10 could come with too much risk. I'm going to go the offensive line, and they do, obviously they made a big investment in Darnell Wright last year, so this is not a right tackle investment, and it may not necessarily be a left tackle investment either. And this is where it gets fun. Do you take a Joe Alt or do you take a Troy Fa'utanu? And I'm going to lean towards Fa'utanu here.
This really? First one off the board. I love this.
First one off the board, yeah. So,
hey, no one had Wright going as the first offensive tackle last year, and he did. So this is this could be true.
This may be crazy, but so with Braxton Jones at left tackle, who's a third-year player now, round pick out of Southern Utah a few years ago. The Bears are in good shape, but not like this is not. I think he's a good player. I don't
think it's not we're Jonathan Ogden. About, yeah,
right, we're not. If he were to eventually be replaced by this player, it's not like you're replacing Trent Williams in his prime. Totally. Jonathan Ogden in his prime. So Troy Fa'utanu, who at worst, Peter, is your super sub at left tackle, left guard, right tackle. I think he's a day one starter at guard for the Bears, and maybe you're saying that this is too much of an investment for back-to-back years, taking a right tackle and then potentially an interior offensive lineman. You got a young quarterback. I am sort of saying, I don't care about conventional norms. I am taking Troy Fa'utanu here. And now the Jets are on the clock and maybe the dreams. I don't know about the dream scenario. A scenario has that.
Hey, look, you say Joe Alt's there. Like, that's a dream scenario. But then, I don't know. That Brock Bowers is
pretty tempting,
really,
right?
Really good. I mean, that's a... And the Jets from everyone. Look, there's certain teams I'm plugged in with. Jets are one of them. They've told me anything's on the board, obviously, and trade back is an option. So they don't have a second round pick this year. Do they think about trading back here and collecting some more pieces? All right, if it goes this way, gosh, offensive tackle versus tight end. I'm going down to Alt or Bowers. Gosh.
I know, it's fun, right?
When did they take Becton? In the 11th pick a couple years ago?
11th, yeah.
He's already a flame out. I don't think he's been signed anywhere. Alt will not be that. Gosh, that's...
Nope, I would agree on that.
All right, for the sake of... I'm going to go Brock Bowers, tight end. Over Joe Alt. They might regret that, but you know what? I feel like Rodgers might want some weapons and Bowers can ball. I'm going to go Bowers to the Jets at 11, at 10. Mm. Oh, that felt weird, which leads to the Minnesota Vikings, who did not get one of the top four quarterbacks at number 11. Field Yates, you're on the clock.
Yeah, so thoughts here would be quarterback. I just don't know that's the right spot there. You know, there's some good offensive linemen here, but they've got a great tackle duo. Edge rusher still feels like a need here. So I thought that maybe because Kwesi Adofo-Mensah has Cleveland roots, San Francisco roots as well. Cleveland, Andrew Berry certainly has skewed very young at his high caliber picks, right? Also, like I was talking about Terry Fontenot. You know, Ryan Gregson, very prominent role there in Minnesota, former Colts GM. And I think that he's got enough of a voice that they may say, you know, we're not going to stick to just, you know, young guys. So I'm going to go Leiatu Latu, Peter. And I just mentioned how, like, hey, is it too much of a risk inside the top 10? Is it possible to take him outside the top 10 at number 11? So I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth and just saying, based off how the board fell right now, I'm going Leiatu Latu. And I'm doing this with the implicit sort of understanding or acknowledgement that their medical staff is comfortable with where things are at. And Latu is a terrific player, such an advanced, nuanced pass rusher. So they lose Danielle Hunter and they replace him with Jonathan Grenard and also Leiatu Latu.
I don't think if you're a Vikings fan, you could complain about that pick at all. You'd look at the board and you'd say, okay, that's how it fell. We didn't give up the next five drafts. We didn't get the quarterback, but let's get the best, you know, first or second best pass rusher in this draft, which leads to Denver at 12. I've got two guys in mind here, neither one being a quarterback. If I'm Denver, I'm thinking here, okay, we're going to go Joe Alt, offensive tackle. I know they're paying Mike McGlinchey a lot of money and they obviously have Garrett Bowles, but I think
Bowles in his 30s. Remember, he came into the league as an older player, right?
I know.
He was a late entrant and I believe during college was a mission that he took. So he's an older prospect or he was an older prospect. So he's at the point now where like looking towards the future is not the worst thing in the world. Plus Joe Hall to pick 12 is pretty darn good, right?
Pretty good. And they don't have to mortgage the future to get it. And another team that didn't get a quarterback at 11 or 12, but I think they'd be happy there, which leads to the Raiders at 13. You're on the clock, buddy.
Yep, I'm going to make it easy here. Michael Penix Jr. And this is the team. I know.
Really?
I haven't read your mock yet this morning, and there's a chance that he's not even in the first round. I don't know. I'm going to this unvarnished. I am not at all. I have no idea what you said. So I'm going to acknowledge that right away. But Michael Penix Jr. Would fill, you know, there's an interesting team, right? They're saying all the right things about Aiden O'Connell and how he's going to have to lose the job for someone to take over for him. And they signed Gardner Minshew to this 2-year deal. But if you look at the quarterback marketplace, like nothing about the finances says guaranteed starter. So Michael Penix Jr. ends up in Las Vegas. It's really tough to pass on both Olu Fashanu and also Tali Fuaga, especially Fuaga because they have Colton Miller. He could be a plug and play right tackle there. But I end up with Michael Penix Jr. at 13.
Dude, I love that.
I should say this. I know entertainment rules, and I'm not trying to make things that are inconceivable.
There's a lot of arguments.
I think there's some conceivable. I think this is a not to be dismissed possibility.
Yeah, and I would also say if Bo Nix went 12 to Denver, I wouldn't bat an eye either. Like, yeah. Quarterbacks are at a premium, and there are about six of them that are going to go in the first or second round. If you like them enough to take them in the 30s, you might as well take them at 12 or 13.
That's how I feel as well. Totally.
All right. So the Titans are on the board now because of your Saints trade.
I mean, this is perfect scenario for them. Perfect.
Just a bunch of offensive tackles that they can
all
select.
Sitting there.
Yep. All there. I will go with Taliese Fuaga out of Oregon State as their pick at 14. I got to talk with him at the combine. That dude is all business. He is a mauler, and whatever team gets him is going to love his attitude in addition to the play. I love his game.
All right, let me just say one thing to help you out here. It's a tough first name to pronounce. I've heard him do interviews, and people have said it different ways, and he's acknowledged them both. But on the pro day circuit and talking to teams, he's often said, "I'm Tali." So Tali seems to work as well. Tali. So, you know, I guess first mention, we'll try to name the, you know, Taliese Fuaga, try to hit it correctly. And I apologize if I missed it there, but apparently he goes by Tali or has gone by Tali during the pre-draft process to some. So hopefully soon enough, we can all call him Tali if that's what he prefers to be called. That leads us to the 15th pick. So my final odds team pick in Indianapolis is here. All right. So Indy's been mocked so many times at the corner that it almost feels boring, Peter. And yet I am going to do the boring thing and give them Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, who has been borderline flawless during the pre-draft process. This is a big time college player at Toledo though, right? So how is he going to handle better competition? Goes to the Senior Bowl, look like he more than belonged. He was a dominant player. The guy was just absolutely aces there, ran 4.33 at the combine. Got good size, has excellent speed, obviously. Great kid. I mean, his football knowledge. I've talked to scouts that are like, this guy is like Einstein. Like, he's so smart. His recall is terrific. Some of the stuff that he has shown during that pre-draft process has been really impressive there. So, Quinyon Mitchell, his intellect combined with his physical skill set makes me feel like he is a good bet in the first half of the first round. Indianapolis at 15. They got by last year with a very young and not heavily invested corner room, especially at the perimeter spots. But it wouldn't surprise me if they make a bigger investment this offseason with Quinyon Mitchell.
I like it.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
And I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh! sure.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Seahawks sitting there at 16. I am looking here, and if I'm the Seahawks, I see a corner that I like. And I also see the offensive tackle out of Penn State. Let's go there. Let's go conservative here. Help me with this one, Field. 16 out of Penn State.
Olu Fashanu.
Yeah. To the Seattle Seahawks at 16, the OT. Now we've got a little run on our big offensive tackles here, which goes to 17, which is going to be my pick, Jacksonville.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm glad that I flipped here because this one's a tricky one, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go,
I know.
I'm going to go Terrion Arnold out of Alabama. I will say this, redshirt sophomore, but yet was, from what I'm told, the leader of that Alabama defense and like the face, even with Dallas Turner there. And it's like the voice, the face, and like the most charismatic kid in this draft, perhaps, and just a magnetism to him and how special a guy he was and his connection with Saban and those folks. I think he's going to be a top 20 pick. Obviously, he might go before Mitchell in the draft. I'm going to say Terrion Arnold here, 17 to Jacksonville.
Okay, I like it. Number 17, I think corner would certainly be one of the most primary needs for that team right now. Darius Williams released. He returns to the Rams this offseason. And, you know, they signed Ronald Darby to a two-year deal, but they need to continue to kind of hammer away in that secondary there. So a good pick there. I am going to go at number 18. The Cincinnati Bengals, who you have to look both short and long term, right? T. Higgins recently said he expects to be back for 2024, but still, he's a franchise tag player who previously requested a trade, wide receiver in need there. But I'm going to Marius Mims. The team recently signed Trent Brown to a one-year deal. Brown, obviously a very talented player when he's on the field and engaged, but a one-year deal and a guy that you can't always expect to be, you know, wire-to-wire dominant player. Marius Mims is a dice roll. This guy has 803 college snaps to his name, Peter. Eight starts, 803 college snaps. That is fewer snaps than Joe Alt played this season alone. So different level of experience, but all the talent. He's got a nearly 87-inch wingspan. If you're a nerd like you and I are and you love wingspans and arm length and things like that, then Marius Mims checks every box. It's going to take some time here, obviously, to develop him, but I think highly of this prospect. If he can put it all together, 18 will end up being a value and not a reach for Amarius Mims.
I love that. Number 19 is the Rams.
I'm listening closely here.
First time that the Rams have had a first round pick with Sean McVay as their coach. How nuts
is
that?
Isn't that insane? Like, are they first time? Does Sean even know the draft begins next Thursday?
No, I don't. I think he's in Cabo. I think he's chilling. Yeah. I don't know who they're going to take. I'll tell you that. And they don't know who they're going to take, how the board falls. I will say this. Yeah. I would be absolutely shocked if they don't take an offensive player. This is McVay's first draft. I don't think they're going to take.
That's a great note.
I don't think they're going to take a middle linebacker. It's just me just knowing him. Yeah, I don't think they're taking a middle linebacker or a third corner. I think they're going to go offense. The question is, do they take a skill position player or do they take it for the sake of fun?
Okay.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
There are a million ways they can go here. I do not have this from them directly, but I look at the way that this guy plays and I know the way that not only Sean, but like Kyle Shanahan wants a player. How about this shocker? 19, Rams take Ladd McConkey out of Georgia.
Ooh, that's a fun one. No, it's interesting. I mean, during the process, I have like from the very first time that you watch Ladd, screen the tape, there's elements of the tape that scream first round pick, right? But
yes,
Georgia offense, which had two players last year, they had two separate running backs with Kendall Milton, Dejon Edwards, who had 13 plus rushing touchdowns. They had Brock Bowers, right? And Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint, a Senior Bowl attendee who could get drafted as well. Like a lot of mouths to feed. So Ladd's overall production, especially when you factor in the time missed due to the injury, you know, like, is it going to blow you away? No, it is not. But he's a hell of a player, and he's an outstanding route runner, which everybody knows.
Smart. Oh, I think of, and I know they're both white receivers, but like he looks like a skinnier Cooper Kupp when I watch him, and I'm like,
People get mad when you make that comp. You know, but there are elements of it that come that are, I think, are pertinent.
I asked for a player comp to a wide receivers coach that I trust in the league, and he didn't go Cooper Kupp. He said Terry McLaurin. Just the intelligence and the route running and the ability. And you know what? I know Brian Thomas is on the board. I know A.D. Mitchell's on the board. It's my mock draft. I have the Rams taking Ladd McConkey.
Peter, there are shocks every year, and I love Ladd. I mean, he's been a fixture in the top 40 or so players from my board for throughout this process. So is 19 a reach relative to my board? Sort of, but I tell people this all the time. The further you get away from the beginning of the draft, like, the less it really matters, Peter. I'm just telling everybody has a different board. Everybody has different things they value. There are a couple of wide receivers that I thought to myself, if they go to the Rams specifically, I would love them. If they go elsewhere, I wouldn't be quite as optimistic. So I totally get that pick. That gets me to the Steelers at number 20. I'm going to keep up with my boring theme here, but sometimes boring means you feel strongly about it. And I'm going Graham Barton, center guard from Duke, guy who played left tackle the past 3 years. Peter was a true freshman center for Duke. So he's played in the interior before, you know, again, back to like arm length and wingspan. Those are the kind of things that suggest he's more of an interior player. The Steelers have really worked hard to reshape that offensive line over the past 14 months, both free agency last year and the draft last year. So give me Graham Barton, who at worst gives you two position flexibility. I think he's probably your day one starter at center. They've released Mason Cole actually like at the beginning of the waiver period. They have not yet replaced him, at least notably to this point. So the Steelers get Graham Barton.
Okay, love it. Here's what we're going to do for 21 to 32.
Okay.
We're just going to go your 10 rapid seconds fire on the clock and rapid fire. I think that's the fair way to do it.
All right.
21 is the Dolphins.
Yep.
I am going to go with Byron Murphy, the big defensive tackle out of Texas.
Yep. Okay. Love it. The guy had just an awesome, awesome final season right there.
And so good at the combine and so good at the work. Oh, yeah. I think it's a great spot for him at 21.
Yep.
22.
Philadelphia Eagles. This is me. I'll go Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle from Oklahoma. They have a long history of taking players early, as in like addressing positions earlier than they need them. They do not necessarily need an offensive tackle, but this would be Jeff Stoutland's newest project. They're terrific offensive line coach. This kid has so much talent, great feet, left tackle or right tackle potential.
Vikings on the board. I am tempted to do it because Bo Nix, quarterback, Oregon.
I'm gonna do it, right?
Do you? I don't know. Like, they sit at 23 and like, are Vikings fans like, okay, in this scenario, we got Latu and Bo Nix. What the hell? We thought we were getting Drake May. You know, like, are they just like blah? Or do you look at that and say, all right, Bo Nix is definitely better than Sam Darnold. I don't know that.
I know. It's the only thing I will say though is just, you know, with the 1 year deal for Sam, you have to already be mindful of 2025, right?
Like,
if things don't go well, then you're obviously looking for a quarterback. If things do go well, then you're going to have to reinvest in Sam. And, you know, negotiating quarterback contracts is not always easy. So, all right. So, man, this is where things get fun, right? So we are up to pick number 24, the Cowboys on the clock. I think this is a team that obviously needs an offensive tackle. I certainly would be looking at the various options here. I would consider a trade down because I think that right now, Peter, like, I may have reached the threshold of my offensive tackle that I think are like unimpeachable first round picks. So what I am going to do is do a little bit of a reach here, Peter, and go with Jordan Morgan, left tackle from Arizona. Not a huge reach, but a tiny bit of a reach here. Something he could be a guard at the next level. Here's the good news for Dallas. If he ends up being a guard, they already have a potential left tackle in Tyler Smith. Their preference, though, would be to leave Tyler Smith at left guard. So you have Jordan Morgan. If he works out at left tackle, you keep things status quo. Otherwise, if he doesn't work out at left tackle, you put him at left guard, Tyler Smith at left tackle.
I'm going to give you a bailout here if you want, because I know how this goes. You've got a board. You've got all this fictional stuff. Would you rather have J.C. Latham, or is that an omission?
Latham already off the not off the board
he's
yet?
Still on the board. Yeah.
Holy crap, Peter. Okay. So this feels like a massive, massive error in our ways. People. All right. So we may need to just acknowledge this. Like, I would have taken him like 14 picks.
All right. So let's go back. So let's go to the offensive tackles here. So you took Chicago, went Fatanau out of Washington. Do you want to keep that?
I will keep that one right there. Yeah.
All right. 12. I took Joe Alt. I still want to keep that. This is where we go. Titans, I still want Fuaga over him. Okay.
All good. No problem there.
Yeah. Seahawks, I still want Fashanu over him.
Yeah. So I guess I didn't really take too many of the tackles.
Bengals, you took Mims over him. Do you want Latham instead of Mims? Latham.
I do. And I apologize to J.C. Latham. So to both J.C. Latham and Amarius Mims. So we'll just keep sliding the guys down the board here, Peter. This Latham, all works out.
Yeah. I like this. Latham goes 8. And then do you want Graham Barton still Steelers or would you
still
rather
good
have
there? Okay. Yep. And then Mims can slide down. So we'll go
to the Eagles.
There we go.
Instead Mims. Of Guyton. Okay. Yep. So
and then
take
the Cowboys
Mims.
Get Guyton. So I apologize. This is the reality of doing a mock draft on the fly, right? When you're staring at your computer screen and going old school, writing things down. So
I love it. All right. So
apologies to those three impacted parties there. Yeah.
No, you're going to have to write a long letter to Jordan Morgan. He thought he was a first round pick. I don't know about that anymore.
He might be.
All right. Yeah. So let's just to recap here. Instead of Mims at 18, the Bengals take J.C. Latham.
Yep.
And then the Eagles take Mims from Georgia. And then the Cowboys, they take
Tyler Guyton. Yep.
Out of
offensive
Oklahoma.
Tackle. Oklahoma. Yep. So.
Okay. Take it. We're good.
Moving
we're back
the ball
on
down the field here. Sorry.
Yes. We're back on course. We're good. Packers, I'll go with. Oh, there are a bunch of wide receivers sitting there, dude. But I don't know.
They've made so many investments there, right?
They have all those late round guys that all were awesome last year. Packers, I will go with. Packers, I will go with Jared Verse out of Florida State.
Yep. And keep beefing up that edge rush. You know, Preston Smith restructured his contract this offseason, keeps him around. But at some point, you know, he's the oldest player on the team, is Preston. I think he's the only guy in the 30s, by the way,
is that
the
right?
entire roster.
That's wild.
Yeah. So a very, very young roster, obviously.
Mason Crosby isn't still kicking there. Okay.
Where did Mason end up with like the Rams last season?
Yeah, they took one of the other Carlson guys. They took one of those too. Yeah.
There you go. Yep. All right. So we are back to pick number 26 here. So we are rolling along. I'm on the evens. Again, this is my way of filibustering for the Bucks. I'll take Chop Robinson, who if you look at the profile of players they have drafted early in Tampa, they have definitely skewed towards athletic guys. Chop Robinson is an elite athlete, somewhat of a divisive prospect because he had modest college production, Peter, just 4 sacks last year, two of which came against UMass. Two sacks in the games against the stiffer competition, but that first step quickness is just so good, Peter. I think this is the definition of a better pro than college player. So I'll go Chop Robinson there.
Chop Robinson it is. Yep. Okay. I'm going to go with another Robinson on the defensive line for the Arizona Cardinals, 27. Yep. I'm going to go Darius Robinson, who is would you call him a rising prospect? I guess like he's been there for a long time. He's done it all. But like in our world, all of a sudden I'm being told he's a surefire first round pick.
Yeah, I think this guy screams first round pick, Peter. He's just the total package as a defensive lineman, right? He's not just an edge rusher, not just a defensive tackle. He spends much of his early portions of his time at Missouri as a defensive tackle, transformed his body, dropped some weight, and he became an edge player. He did not dominate the combine in part because he still got some defensive tackle body left on him, but had a great season this past year for the Tigers, part of that really, really good defense, obviously. Had a totally dominant pro day as well, which, again, people will say, what the heck is a pro day worth? Well, every team is either there or watching it on film, Peter. And I'm just telling you, I've gotten feedback on that pro day that it was awesome. So Darius Robinson's tape says first round pick. And I think that other parts of the process have also said first round pick. Love it for Arizona at number 27. And the Bills, I think, just maybe won a lottery here, Peter, right? I mean, to get either Brian Thomas or Aiden Mitchell
make
at
a choice.
28. I'll go Brian Thomas Jr. I have him one whole spot ahead of him on the big board. Than A.D. Mitchell, but Brian Thomas Jr., such a great accelerator at the second level, had over 17 yards a catch last year, had 17 receiving touchdowns that led FBS. The guy's second gear is just so special. And of course, when you have, I don't know about the strongest arm, but certainly on the short list for strongest arms, now that Anthony Richardson is in the league and a couple of other guys, that strong arm competition would be fascinating. But with Josh Allen's arm strength, A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. would work. Give me Brian Thomas Jr.
Would everyone be just gobsmacked if Ladd McConkey went before Brian Thomas? This is what I'm saying. It's just fit. Like,
yeah, but for the Rams, I wouldn't be at all, right?
Exactly.
Rams, I mean, just in the same way that Puka, if you place him in Buffalo, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to a guy who had maybe the greatest rookie receiver season ever, but the outcome is different than the system he played in Los Angeles. It was just That's what I love about what they do in LA, is that they're less worried about how the league views a player and more worried about how they view a player.
And that is exactly the perfect transition to a team that has a general manager from the Los Angeles Rams organization, yeah, who also took a running back and an inside linebacker with two first round picks last year. The Lions at 29. I can go a million ways here. Mm-hmm. I am going to say the Lions take Kool-Aid McKinstry at like 29.
It. Yeah, yeah. Alabama corner has had a good pre-draft process recently because he came back from that foot injury, ran somewhere in the high 4.4s. You know, everybody's got a different stopwatch at pro days. Buttery smooth, though, Peter. Really, really good, like natural man coverage player, and 20 pass breakups over the past couple of years. So when the football is in his vicinity, it ain't often caught, which is a good sign there for Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I think Kool-Aid might actually have a better rookie year than Terrion Arnold, like just because of the experience and just getting him out there. And it feels like he might even be more pro ready to take on number one wide receivers. And I feel like the Lions, like that defensive backfield, they could use another guy.
Yeah, they could use one more guy. And the Ravens in that defensive backfield, still, I think, you know, a body short there. So I will go with, so I look at the big board. I just want to make sure that I'm not like totally overlooking players that I have ranked higher on my big board. And there are a couple of names that are still pretty intriguing there. I can make a pretty good case between Cooper DeJean and Nate Wiggins. And I'll go Nate Wiggins from Clemson.
Okay.
Speedy corner, man, ran a 4.28 at the combine. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of a fool's errand in focusing too much on one play, one series, or one game. But I've talked about this a bit with Kuiper, is there were two separate occasions this past year where Nate Wiggins was like out of the frame of the TV and a running back was off to the races for what would be an easy touchdown. And Wiggins with that 4.28 speed caught him on both occasions. One time he forced a fumble against North Carolina that resulted in a touchback. Other time he forced a fumble at the 1 yard line by a Miami running back that was recovered by Miami, but it, you know, it became a jump ball for either being a touchdown or a touchback. So Nate Wiggins, I thought championship effort showed up on a couple of different occasions that speed really applied. So he goes to the Ravens at pick 30.
Okay, I dig that pick. Right now, there's a bunch of names that are on the board. We got two teams left. All
Cooper
these
wide receivers. I'm sorry, Xavier Leggett.
Oh, Andrew, we're still Cooper, talking A.D. Mitchell still out
Xavier
there.
Worthy, A.D. Mitchell. Those are the names. Yep.
Yep. And, you know, you could always just say, hey, give me the next offensive lineman. Jordan Morgan, of course, we said. We said Zach Frazier still on the board out of West Virginia. He's tough. Yep. You know what? I'm going to go Zach Frazier. Four-time All-State wrestling champion, inside offensive lineman, nothing flashy. 49ers take Zach Frazier over all those wide receiver prospects just to cause great madness amongst the 49ers faithful. That's just what I'm doing. I'm going offensive lineman, tough, gritty guy who they're going to just continue to protect Brock Purdy with.
By the way, this team does what it wants in the draft, right?
Yep.
The 49ers are not beholden to, you know, my mock drafts or your mock drafts, right? They're going to do what they want to do. And if that means taking a center at 31 that some think might be available at 41, so be it. They don't care.
What do you make of Zach Frazier? Because everyone loves the kid, but no one has him in the first round. I just said, screw it. I like him.
Yeah. So is at the Big 12 Pro Day. He's the toughest player in the draft. There's no two ways about that, right? Wrestling background. Everybody knows the story by now. Final play for him at West Virginia this past year, breaks his leg. Game-winning drive is going on. But of course, in college, if you require medical assistance, you don't have a timeout. It's a 10-second runoff. So the guy hobbles to the sideline to ensure that his team preserves 10 seconds, which is so tough and so impressive. But that injury obviously impacted it. So he was at the combine, took part in some portions of the combine.
He tried it.
And then at Big 12 Pro Day, didn't have overwhelming numbers. So I think that's the question, is for a center only, probably a center only, is the athletic profile good enough for every team to view him this level? That's the question mark. I think if he ends up going 41, it would be because of the, or, you know, in that range, it would be because the athletic stuff. But the question you have to ask is that a real reflection of who he is athletically? I mean, the guy's coming off of a major leg injury. So long-winded way of saying, don't know for sure what the range is, but there was a time where I would have thought 25, 26, 27 was where the range started for Zach Frazier. That brings you to the Chiefs at 32. And I'm going to make it real simple. A.D. Mitchell, right? I mean, we need a wide receiver desperately.
Done.
And A.D. Mitchell probably, I think he goes earlier than this, Peter, but it is, it's, that's a heck of a pick right there. I mean, I don't know. They've been so money in the draft recently that I'm going to, whoever they pick, I'm going to probably just be programmed to say.
A+. Great pick.
Right? Yeah,
great value. Awesome.
Yeah. You know, there is pressure in the sense that they need some of these guys to perform to continue to fill holes that they, that are created when they lose players in free agency. But we've also seen that, like, It's not, they didn't need, like, last year's first round pick barely played.
They took a defensive lineman out of what, TCU?
Out of Kansas State, yeah.
Kansas State.
On Udike Uzoma, yeah.
Never got on the field.
Yeah, so it's like, yes, you need these guys. You also kind of don't, right? But I do think A.D. Mitchell or Xavier Leggett would be fascinating there. The only thing I'll add at 32, Peter, everybody talks about the possibility of teams trading up into the back of the first-round quarterbacks. I'll highlight this. How about the potential for a wide receiver trade-up? All right, you've got Carolina at 33, New England at 34, both needy for wide receivers. If they start to see that run happening, or if one of those guys falls a little bit, wouldn't be I don't have intel on either of those teams. I am simply using logic and noting that you really need a wide receiver, and at some point that drop-off takes place. Do you say, hey, take our third to go from 34 to 26 or 33 to 25 and get that preferred wide receiver target?
I don't remember. Both of us are encyclopedias. Obviously, we've seen the trade back into the first for quarterback a million times. I don't have a recollection of like, 31 or 32, like we need to trade up to get a wide receiver. Do you have anyone that you can remember that was the guy?
Okay, let me think. I don't think I can recall a wide receiver trade up, but I want to say, and I'm going to try to pull this up on the fly here through Google. Do I recall Tampa moving up for a late first round offensive lineman a few years back? That may be a misrecollection there.
No, that sounds right. It was the guy. It was the guy from it was because they took the big kid out of what's his name?
Was it Logan Hall? Who this was a couple years ago.
Yes, and in the first pick they took the other kid who I sound like I'm just like muttering. Was it Vita Vea they took with like the 13th pick, and then
that one they took early. Yes, so let me just see if I can get this correctly here. This may be wrong. Okay,
if they have a second
here first we go. Ready? Pick. There we go. I had it backwards. It was Tampa. They moved back. It was the year that Jacksonville moved up from 33 to 27 from Devin Lloyd, the wide receiver. I'm part of the linebacker. So
got it.
I don't know why I said wide receiver there. And the linebacker from Utah. Yes.
And Jacksonville took, that was Tavon Walker, their first overall pick. So they had Lloyd and Walker.
Yep, exactly. So they had three first round picks that year. Am I making that up? Gosh, no. Peter, for guys who take this.
No, they had Etienne was the year before with Trevor Lawrence.
I'm sorry. They had back-to-back years with two first round picks. It was Etienne Lawrence, and then they had Walker and also Devin Lloyd there. So a lot of capital there in Jacksonville to work with.
All right. I love what we just did. I feel great.
Yeah.
Real quick for the listeners.
For 32.
Should we just rattle it off? Do you have your list in front of you of all the picks or no?
I do. Yeah, I got it all right here. So we can go back and forth.
You go first. Williams.
Williams for the Chicago Bears, number one.
Number two, Washington, Jaden Daniels.
Number three, the Patriots, Drake May.
Number four, the Giants trade up and get J.J. McCarthy.
Yep. Number five, the Chargers stand pat and take Marvin Harrison Jr.
Number six, Arizona trades back and still gets Roma Dunze.
Okay. Number seven, things get spicy. The Saints trade up to take Malik Nabers. Number seven, meaning Tennessee moves back to 14.
Number eight, Atlanta, Raheem Morris's first pick as a new head coach of the Falcons takes Dallas Turner, defensive end out of Alabama.
And number nine, the Chicago Bears stand pat and take Troy Fontanu. A little bit of disruptive pick there from University of Washington.
Jets go with 10 and stay where they are, and they take the tight end Brock Bowers out of Georgia.
Yeah, Vikings don't move up, so they take Leatu Latu, the awesome edge rusher from UCLA.
Number 12, the Denver Broncos with the number one offensive tackle prospect and a lot of teams board sitting on the board. They take Joe Alt out of Notre Dame.
All righty. And the Raiders at number 13 take Michael Penix Jr.
I love that. That's where I think it's Tom Telesco, you dog.
He's the most unpredictable GM in the first round. It's great. He's a hard guy
after year.
That's a hat tip to him, by the way.
It is. And say what you want about the Chargers win losses over the last decade. Their first round picks have been absolutely money. 14, the Titans, they trade back and they get Tally. Fuwanga. I was told to make it an NG like Tua Tonga Vailoa. So it's Tally Fuwanga, offensive tackle, Oregon State.
Okay. It is noted now. Tally Fuwanga. All right. So 15, Indianapolis Colts, Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback from Toledo.
Great. 16, Seahawks, Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle / whatever you need him to be, Penn State.
And then you go right back to the well because this is our flip, our odds to evens reversal here.
17, Jacksonville Jaguars. They select Terrion Arnold, cornerback out of Alabama.
18, my personal apology tour begins. The Bengals take J.C. Latham after previously taking Amarius Smith. J.C. Latham is the pick confirmed at number 18.
Would you be shocked if that was the order of the offensive tackles? If it went, let me go through it here.
Yeah.
Otanu, okay, then Joe Alt,
yep.
Then Fuaga, then Fashanu, and then going with Latham all the way down there as the fifth one taken. Would you be shocked or no?
There are some massive, massive grades on J.C. Latham around the NFL, Peter. So I would be surprised.
Yeah.
But those massive grades may not necessarily be held by teams that are in position to make those first picks of the offensive tackles.
Yeah,
but there
I heard he could be the first one taken. I mean, so it could be anywhere. So we have him fifth. That's just the draft. That's how it goes. Yeah,
sorry.
That's what it is.
Yep.
Number 19 is...
The Spice Tour. This is where it gets great.
Screw it. Ladd McConkey, come at us. Wide receiver, Georgia.
Ladd McConkey. Love it. Great player. 4.39 40. The guy can absolutely fly. Graham Barton goes 20 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Meat and potatoes. Fill him at center. Fill him in at center right away. We run.
Number 21, Byron Murphy, defensive tackle out of Texas.
Mm-hmm. That one feels just too good to ignore. No Christian Wilkins there anymore. All right, number 22, Eagles on the clock. They take Amarius Mims, who, again, got through the grips of the Bengals because they took J.C. Latham.
All right, 23, the Vikings. I'm not going to say they're settling, but they get the fifth quarterback off the board, Bo Nix, quarterback out of Oregon.
Bo's got good tape, man. I get it. People are going to want the guy in the first five picks, and I understand that. I would too, but Bo's got some good tape. Tyler Guyton, 24th overall at the Cowboys, potential to play left tackle or right tackle, but they've got Terrence Steele there, so he settles in at left.
25, Jared Verse to the Packers, Florida State.
Yep. And then Chop Robinson, 26. So back-to-back edge rushers. He goes to the Buccaneers, who still have a need opposite of Joe Tryon-Trionka.
Yes. Let's go back-to-back-to-back defensive linemen. Arizona Cardinals select Darius Robinson out of Missouri.
Yeah. Talk about some good tape right there. All right. So 28, Buffalo Bills take Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver from LSU, to pair with Josh Allen.
If he falls to 28, you say that's crazy. It happens, guys. 29.
It does happen. Yeah.
The Lions take Kool-Aid McKinstry, defensive back out of Alabama.
Number 30. So again, we are in cornerback run territory. Nate Wiggins goes from Clemson to the Baltimore Ravens, who need offensive line and cornerback help.
And 31, I said, screw it. The 49ers take a center coming off a broken leg, Zach Frazier out of West Virginia.
Yep. It's never too early to look ahead, especially when you have an investment that could be amongst the highest paid players in the league next year in Brock Purdy. And then 32, the Chiefs wrap things up with A.D. Mitchell. Personal apologies from me, Peter, go to Cooper DeJean, the highest rated player on my board that did not go in the first round.
And personal apology to me to Jordan Morgan, who put the hat on and everything and still did not go in our first round. Guys, that is our first round. Field Yates, 90 minutes of just juice. I loved it, dude. You are so great at what you do. I'm wishing you so much luck over the next 10 days. You're going to have a blast and I'll be watching, obviously. And maybe we're sets are sort of near each other. We can give a little fist pound, like, you know.
I love those. It. I would love to do it. Yeah. No, I love how much I love how much the draft means to you, and I admire the heck out of your process and all that you do. And I'm glad that Good Morning Football will be on the air during the draft, because fans certainly deserve your and the entire panel's insight for that. The second best event on the entire NFL calendar behind only the Super Bowl, which may sound sacrilegious, but.
I might go draft, combine, then Super Bowl.
That's how much you love it. That's dedication to it.
Love it.
So great.
Field Yates, you're the man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
So there you go, guys. Hopefully you were on a commute or you're on a run or a jog or you broke it up into two spots. Like, that is just content. That is just juice. And Field is great at what he does. You can watch him on ABC's coverage the first two nights and then ESPN's coverage on day three. I encourage you to do so. Flip around. I'll be over on NFL Network, but there's so much good draft coverage. Field is one of the greats, and he's really coming into his own. I love when we do that. I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't have Michael Penix in my first round of my mock draft. He's got him going 13th overall to the Raiders. That's the beauty of this thing. The two of us are as plugged in as anybody, and that's how different it can be. I'm going to do one more of these, I think, this week. We're working on it. Might be with Daniel Jeremiah. It might be with somebody else. But like, I feel like this is what you guys want from what I'm hearing from all the feedback on the podcast. You liked these last year. We'll keep on doing them this year up until draft. It's a simulation. It's an exercise, but it also informs you on a lot of these guys. I got about 50 nuggets from players that I didn't know just listening to Field talk. The Roma Dunze stuff was terrific. And of course, you talk about Quinion Mitchell being described as a genius. I had not heard that. I love that. I will add that to my repertoire and I will consider that as good info to share moving forward. But there you go. More draft stuff. And on behalf of Aaron Juan Kaufman, who's been just fantastic and flexible around my schedule, and Jason English and everybody at the NFL Network, and in this case, I guess ESPN, we're all hands on board here. The NFL draft is one of my favorite events, and I want to make sure you guys are as well informed as possible. Till next time, this is The Season. Peter Schrager.
The Season with Peter Schrager is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.